This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Jason Cutter here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show. This is part three of my conversation with the amazing, talented, skilled, and I'm going to say very knowledgeable Joe Calamusa from the University of Alabama. Joe, welcome to part three of our conversation.
No, glad to be here. Thanks for having me back.
We've been on a wild journey. We've gone through topic about authenticity and persuasion and kind of those as like a giant umbrella, but more of a starting point, you know, as I kind of joke around, you know, even we, before we hit record the first time is, you know, I'm just going to start some topics and some questions, pull the pin and throw it to you and just kind of see where it goes with no major trying to control this thing and direct it. And it's been fun. I love it. We definitely don't have enough time for everything that I still would like to ask you about. Yet here we are, part three. This is about the future of sales. And so let's just dive right into it. No intro stuff. People want to find it. They can read the show notes. They can check out the first two parts. Make sure to follow you online. So when we talk about the future of sales, we left off in the persuasion process piece, talking about buyers and what they want and companies, you know, where the goal is to help you get from where you are to where you want to be. What do buyers, customers, consumers, anything in that category, what do they want more of from a sales professional?
We see, and it's not everywhere, and the progress is different. The evolution is different. It's very we've done some metaphors, and I've been rather clunky with some of these metaphors. But if you, to me, it's like looking at the globe, and you look at how different geographies of different areas of the world or countries of the world evolve economically and socioeconomically differently. So you can't put a set standard on a certain economic maturity and say this is good, and because you're behind this, you're bad. Things just don't, you know. And sometimes two geographies that are very nearby may be going through very different, you know, set times in their cycle. I would say the same thing can be applied to customers or buyers or consumers, as you mentioned. But as a general rule, more to data-based decision making, and if data is going to be used to make decisions and my job is to influence decisions into my favor, which I hope is the favor of the customer as well, then I've got to be the provider, but also the person who can not only provide the data, but interpret the data, apply the data to the situation I'm in. So while data-based selling or data-driven selling may not be the language in every selling situation, it is the way forward from an evolution standpoint. It's just some aspects of buyers have gotten there faster.
Okay, so and I understand it's obviously relative and everybody's different. There's some fundamentals going to be the same. When you say data-based selling, what do you mean? Because in the previous part, we were talking about the fact that, you know, the role of the salesperson has changed, where it's not about like, you've got to come through me to get the price and the features and people can find it online. So when you say data-based selling, what does that mean to you?
Yeah. Well, the primary thing it means is whatever I say is rooted in or is data, stats, facts, logic, reason. Okay. So if what I'm saying, if every word is unpolluted, so great sales presentations are essentially four things. They're relevant to the customer, which means you gotta have empathy, right? They are organized, they're structured in some way. They're unpolluted, which means data, stats, facts, logic, reason, no superlatives. You know, my product is amazing. This process is fantastic. We're mind-boggling. We're breaking the code on the industry, all that junk. That's pollution, okay? And then it's got to be dynamic. So it's got to be some kind of dynamism inside it. It's moving you. It's moving them. Anyway, my point of that is I've got to be rooted in the data, stats, facts, logic, reason. To your point, I cannot be a catalog full of data, stats, facts, logic, reason. I am not the graph. My job is to bring the graph be able to discuss what the graph means to the person that I'm sharing the graph with, and how we're going to use the implications of this situation to help their conditions or their position. So that's what may, but if I start with, if I don't start with the core of data, stats, facts, logic, reason, well, then I'll never get, I said it in the previous episode, expertise is the entry fee. That's data, stats, facts, logic, reason. Empathy empowers the expertise. The empathy is me truly understanding your lens, your language, where you are, where you want to go. But it's not my opinion on what you should do. It's my authoritative knowledge rooted in data, stats, facts, logic, reason that makes my direction credible.
I love it. So on the flip side of that, what do the buyers, consumers, customers, what do they want less of in the future, let's say relative to salespeople? And that future could be very much now as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think that the answer to that question you might get from some is, you know, less salespeople is what they want. I honestly don't. Our understanding, the people, the companies we work with, they don't actually want that. They want less of the anachronistic, cliche, caricature salesperson, right? They want more of what you and I have been talking about in this three-part series. And actually, they want more of that. They don't just want more of their sales interactions to be more that. They want more sales interactions than they've ever had before, as long as those sales interactions are like that. Okay? So they're searching for that type of interaction, that type of person who can bring to them what we've talked about in the discussion. And I think what they're looking for, and in the context of, and I don't, transactional and relational, those, that's a tough spectrum to play with. A lot of times they don't want a relationship like other people would describe relationship. They don't want a friend or a buddy, or even a partner. Not everything's a partnership. Sometimes perpendicular or intersectional relationships are great. They just don't want an interaction where the seller is seeking a transaction. That's what they want less of, is the interaction where the seller is seeking a transaction, because you lose all the good stuff along the way.
And that's interesting you put it that way, right? Because some people say, oh, well, I don't want to be transactional, so I got to build so much relationship and rapport and empathy, that then it's like this relationship you're saying that person doesn't want, and probably is too busy and mentally overloaded to even contemplate or think about it, doesn't want to invest that much. They want a solution, but they don't want to feel like a number. And so, speaking of which, when we talk about the future of sales, which of course is now, and the technology that's available and the future salespeople, what buyers want, what are your thoughts when you hear like the standard thing that sales is a numbers game? What does that mean to you? What does that trigger to you? And or what do you think that will mean in the future?
Meaning a numbers game as far as how we're evaluating?
I just got to make more calls. As long as I have this many conversations, I do more. Like, sales is a numbers game, right? You just got to get up to bat 1,000 times and you're going to do well.
Yeah. All the, like the funnel stuff, like my funnels, top of the funnel bigger or whatever. I generally junk, I guess, was my initial reaction to that thought process. But, I think the quality more than, The people that we talk to in the field now that are elite level sellers and work with and benchmark have a quality controls quantity mentality. Okay. So now I can't make, you know, one call and make it real good and call it a week. So we got to put that stuff aside, but everything is relative to the industry space I'm in, the size of my transactions, how interactions are held, all those things. But just put all that aside as like a standard. Generally, the quality of my performance controls the quantity of my production. Okay? So I'm not playing a numbers game. I have a pipeline or whatever you want to call it. I'm managing opportunities. But I'm not doing it by just trying to dump everything into the identify, qualify part of the pipeline or portfolio, and then whatever shakes out, shakes out. It's the quality of the process, whether I'm macro managing a single opportunity. from identify to qualify to propose to negotiate to manage. That's managing, macro, managing at an individual opportunity. Even higher up than that, managing a relationship or a territory so those opportunities will fall off that I can, you know, push through. But then every single interaction inside of that management, the micro piece we've talked about so far, is the elite sellers have the mentality of every sentence buys me the next sentence or it doesn't. And if I have the mentality of every sentence buys me the next sentence or it doesn't, then I don't have to worry as much about, you know, whether I got enough in the funnel.
Why is that? I get the quality controls the quantity, which I love the way you put that, but every sentence buys me the next sentence. Like, where does that really affect, like, I guess, the focus or the process, the mindset?
Yeah. So many, if you back to the pipeline piece, right? Just for that's a typical sales sort of cliche. Mm-hmm. If I'm managing a pipeline, you have sellers who get so obsessed with the pipeline, so focused on the pipeline, which goes back to your original question, okay? So focused on the pipeline that there are all these opportunities that are stalling out and falling out in and of the pipeline. But they're myopically focused on the pipeline. So their mentality is, well, just put more stuff in the pipeline, just prospect more so I can fill up that pipeline more. Numbers game, as you said. Mm-hmm. While there are opportunities, individual opportunities that are stalling out and falling out that would not have stalled out or fallen out had you had the quality of managing the individual interaction. The most difficult thing for a salesperson to do is to balance and maneuver with agility among the macro perspective of looking at my business as a whole and the micro perspective of diving down into an individual opportunity with an individual interaction with a member of a decision center on Thursday, 5 minutes, questions, go. I got to get ready for that. And then as soon as it's over, I got to rise back up and look at my entire portfolio or pipeline or whatever it is and say, okay, now what needs me next? And go down and zoom in. The challenge is if you have only a numbers game pipeline perspective, you end up having so many opportunities that die, fall out, stall out because they weren't properly managed. Now, however, if you only have a micro thing where you got a meeting on Thursday and the world stops and for 6 days you work only on Thursday, well, then you don't have a pipeline perspective. Well, there's all these things that are stalling out and falling out while you're fixing the one. So you got to be or getting ready for the one. So you got to be able to go up and down. So it is not a numbers game, though you have to understand the numbers. And it's not just a one sentence at a time game. But if you don't have a one sentence at a time mentality, you'll never have enough results to stay in the job long enough to manage a pipeline.
I love it. It reminds me of something that Gary Vaynerchuk says, if anyone listens to him or takes in any of his content, which is for some people not, but he talks about clouds and dirt, right? Some people have their heads in the clouds. Some people are only in the dirt, and you got to be able to do both, right? Because you've got to live in both realms, like you're saying, like you've got to be able to look at the big picture of your pipeline and then do the things in detail, but you can't just fill a pipeline without doing the work in the pipeline, right? That'd be like buying groceries over and over again, but not actually doing much with them. And then they're just rotting. And you're just like, oh, well, yeah, we need food. So let me just keep buying groceries.
If you look at your business, if your pipeline generally your pipeline is either strong, healthy, weak, or sick. And if the pipeline is weak or sick, the current state of your pipeline or current state of your portfolio, whatever it is, if it's weak or sick, it can only be weak or sick for two reasons. Either it's weak or sick because you don't have enough opportunities feeding it, or it's weak or sick because the ones that are in there are stalled out and fallen out and they're falling out and they're not going anywhere. So there's only two things. I mean, the sales, all I do is two things: make sure I have things to chase and chase them. But I got to be able to do both. I can't just have chase the one thing that I got, but I can't just have to bring in the new things and let whatever will be. You got to be able to do both.
I love it. With where we're at now, right? It's 2023. There's a ton of technology that's available now, even relative to when you started in sales, when I started in sales. Where do you see that balance now and in the future of sales with the technology that's available, the omni-channel, the texting, the chatting, the emails, and then also that balance with what buyers want from a professional salesperson.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, isn't it a paradox that it's harder than ever before to reach customers and it's easier than ever before to reach customers? I mean, there's so many different methods and means of connecting, but now there's so many of our competitors and even their competing priorities and things that they're working on also using all those means of communication. I think the idea of, from a technology standpoint is one, it complements us, it equips us, it doesn't replace us, though there will be some of us who are replaced, but we're replaced not because technology is evil and it took my job. It will replace us because we allow it to replace us because we did not add any value over and above it. If you use it to, if we use it to equip us, it could be a great revolution in what we do. It could be a major transformation for us, okay? It's like the Walmart example we used from an earlier one of these sessions where Walmart was, you know, came in and took over a bunch of stuff. And yeah, it took over a bunch of stuff, but because people could buy stuff better, faster, and cheaper. So the idea is we've got to understand that technology is a benevolent force. It can only be an evil force if we let it sacrifice us or suffocate us. So how are we going to use it to achieve our goals? How are we going to use it to pursue our purpose? And all these things you just mentioned as far as different mediums, yes, it means I have to be better at multiple mediums. We work with a lot of salespeople training and teaching in the field now. And man, if I hear one more person say to me, especially during the pandemic and right after coming out of it, right, going from pandemic to endemic, if I hear one person say, "I listen, I'm just waiting for in person to get back because I'm just better in person. I'm waiting on it. As soon as I'm just holding my, I'm holding my powder and waiting for in person." Shut up. I mean, if you're waiting for in person to get back, even when in person gets back, your sales are going down by 40%. Because 40% of their actions will never be in person compared to where they were before. Or I love text. Who cares what you love? I communicate better via email. Well, so? I'm good over the phone. Okay. I mean, you've got to be good at all of these things. I mean, you've got to be good at every medium. I'm just using different mediums to communicate messages. There's only three things: messenger, message, and messaging. So I'm the messenger, I got a message to send, and I'm gonna use different forms of messaging to get it there. And if I can orchestrate and curate that, I'll beat all the other people that are waiting for the in-person meeting a week from Tuesday.
Or who are just trying to rely on text and email so they can scale and automate and take the easy way out.
Yeah, or you know, be at the Starbucks having a mocha frappa while they're doing it, them too.
When you look at the future of sales from a future salespeople, which is the students that you have in your class and that you've had, and then like where that has even changed. What are your thoughts? What excites you about the future generation of salespeople that you're producing, right? That you have a hand in, that you're helping craft and mold and inspire and get them excited. Like what excites you about that versus, let's say, the old school mode?
Just at the very base fundamental of it, that they are one generation removed from the old. Every generation. It's funny, you're interviewing and talking to academics and folks that are in this world. You know, the blessing and the curse for us is every year I get a year older and they don't. So they're still the same age because they came in, the new ones came in, and I'm 1 year older, okay? So the base level of this thing is all the stuff about us that is the cross we have to carry, all the stuff about us that we hate, and we could use metaphor too, right? The history of any country or state or anywhere, right? We have all these things in our history that we're kind of ashamed of. If you're at all self-aware, we all have things that we're kind of ashamed of. Well, we should be ashamed to a large degree of some of our history in the way that we sought to manipulate and sought to push things on people that didn't need it and sought to trick the people who could be tricked. I mean, that goes back as far back as you can, you know, look at commerce. Okay. We should be ashamed of those things. Every generation of student that comes through here is one generation removed from that. And whatever is left in their DNA, just as a business student or as a professional, there might be some of that left in their DNA, but every year that DNA just gets a little bit more unpolluted, a little bit less toxic, right? So the thing that most excites me is that I get to go into a classroom every day and breathe clean air, just clean air. And so we're building people to speak with clean air. The oxygen you use to speak, to breathe in, to speak, is only the oxygen that you pull from the room around you, right? And so now companies are getting cleaner and colleges are getting cleaner and elementary schools are getting cleaner. And so everything's getting cleaner. So next semester, I just got done with the spring semester. When you come back in the fall, the room will be cleaner than it was in the last semester when I was teaching.
I love it. That's the best explanation I've heard so far of that impact that people like you are having in that sales education space, right? I mean, of course, there's trainers and coaches and consultants out there, but you know, as far as what you're doing, I love what you said, right? It's about removing that next generation. They're one generation removed from the part that's shameful, the part that we don't like about sales. And again, I think the more that you in your role help fill the world with these people that are breathing cleaner, different air, it's just going to dilute the shameful parts and eventually, you know, make that a minuscule part that people just won't even tolerate and don't even want to deal with. So that's, well said. That's why I'm so excited. And I appreciate all the stuff that you're doing for these students.
Well, it's funny. One of the excerpts out of your book that goes with that was impactful is, and I'm not going to do it justice, was some version of the fact that you have to, you know, when you're trying to show empathy, trying to ask questions, trying to listen, trying to learn, you have to actually mean it. Like you can't just that fake it till you make it spirit is such a hurtful, hurtful, hurtful spirit, because people who fake it till they make it never make it, because faking it's so much easier than actually trying to make it. The problem is these days, which is different than it was, say, 20 years ago, these days people can feel a fake. So your approach in the teaching was you have to actually mean it, which is the authenticity piece. You have to actually mean it. Well, I'm going to enter a room full of people who don't have fake it till you make it in their core spirit. They don't have I don't really mean it. Sales is where you go to slick, slimy, silly in their spirit, in their DNA. So I get to work with you. When you start with good raw material, you know, it makes it a lot easier. I don't mean the character of the student or what their IQ is. I just mean general in the sales context, that they don't have any of that slick, slimy, silly in them. So I don't have to break it down and renovate it and rebuild it. I just get to build on a clean, fresh parcel of land that just passed its soil test and it's ready to be built on. And that's the most exciting thing for me as a sales educator.
Final question, because we haven't addressed it this whole time, but it's amazing when we've spoke before and you've shared this with me, your mission, vision, purpose statement that you have, that's the guiding principle of you and the program.
Our purpose here at the University of Alabama Sales Program, but then anything that I do inside and outside of UA, all the teams that I work with and staffs that I work with, profits and nonprofits, everything we do and everything that we do, I won't do it if this is not what the reason we're doing it, falls under the purpose of to teach and to inspire for the professional fulfillment of our students. Now, those students can be college students or corporate students, okay? So teach. Teach means you are infusing, you are providing, you are at least, at the very least, offering skills. Okay? Teach skill. Inspire is will. Okay? Teach is skill, inspire is will. So we're trying to deliver skill and will to all those who are hearing us, seeing us, working with us, students of any kind. Okay? Skill times will equals fulfillment. The more fulfilled you are is determined by the combination of your skill and your will. As your skill goes up, you'll perform better. Skill is, you know, capabilities, expertise, experience, talent. And as your will goes up, energy, effort, tenacity, as your will goes up, you'll perform better. So skill times will equals results. People generally know that. But skill times will equals fulfillment. Because as my results improve, I will be more fulfilled in what I'm doing. But even if I'm not fulfilled in what I'm doing at the moment, the increase in skill and the increase in will can fulfill me separately from the results that I may or may not be getting in the thing that I'm doing. In fact, if your skill is going up and your will is going up and your results are not going up, then get out of the thing that you're doing and get into something else. So it doesn't even matter. It's not even a respecter of the position or the place you're in. It's a truth. It's a constant. If I'm increasing skill and I'm increasing will, I will become a more fulfilled person. So my job, wherever I go, from wake to sleep, I'm a prisoner of purpose, a living sacrifice, fully submitted to the mission. Every breath, everything I do, okay? Teach and inspire for the professional fulfillment of others, because I'm making your skill go up and I'm making your will go up. And I'm going to do that all day, every day until I die. And then hopefully somebody else will pick it up and run with it.
I love it. Mic drop, as they would say. Perfect place to leave it. And I will say that my experience, while limited of you and only virtual, it's all that. Like, you have given so much to me. You've given so much on these episodes, even in between the recordings and just the way that we've chatted. I appreciate that. And I appreciate that you're on this mission with that purpose and then living that and then sticking to that and making decisions based on that for the students, with the students, for the programs, for clients, for everything that you do. So thank you for that and for bringing that to the show and sharing all this on that purpose as well.
Yeah, thank you. You are the personification of your, and for sure the first word of authentic persuasion. I mean, I deal with a lot of people, and generally if somebody asks me to do something, as long as it's not hurtful or toxic in some way, I'll generally do it, because my thought process, well, I can use that platform to teach and inspire somebody. But I tell you something, man, you are authentic. So I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it. And if I can help you in a way in the future, please let me know.
I do appreciate that. I acknowledge that. It's something I put out there and stick to. I'm the same person here as if we met at the grocery store and in passing. And so I do appreciate that. For everyone who wants to find out more about you, connect with you, be a part of that purpose, just learn from you. LinkedIn, Joe Calamusa, also the University of Alabama sales program, uasalesprogram.com. Links will be in the show notes. Lots of things will be in the show notes as well. Once again, final, Joe, thank you for being here. Appreciate you being part of this journey with us. And thank you everyone for tuning in, getting so much from these three parts. If you're here, it's for a reason. Maybe it's to be a part of Joe's purpose, to learn from him, to get some inspiration, to guide your own life, hopefully to help shift the way that you are in sales and you do sales and you're a part of it and the science versus the art and this whole thing that we've, crazy journey that Joe and I have had over these three episodes. I can't believe where we started and where we ended. So thank you for that. And my voice is going out because I'm just so excited from this whole conversation. And thank you for being a part of this journey to help fill the world with authentic persuaders.